This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, and I'm with Audrey Sherman of Audrey Jane's Pizza Garage in Boulder, Colorado, right? And that's like a one-of-a-kind place. If you haven't been to Boulder, you may not know about it. If you've been to Pizza Expo, you've probably met Audrey. That's where we first met, right? I think I met you at last year. Was it last year or the year before at the Expo?
It might have been, but I think I had met you at Tony's years and years ago.
Wow, that's right. Back when we were like recording there, I think. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that journey? Because right now, Audrey's Pizza Garage has been featured on the Food Network and everywhere else, so it's starting to get its own reputation. But there's a whole lead up to that allowed you to go from where? From Italy to Boulder. And fill us in a little bit on that, Audrey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in a family bagel business, which we still have. And that's where I think I initially got my love of bread and all things gluten.
Where is that business?
It's in Boulder, Colorado as well. Yeah,
my parents
started it, I want to say, almost like 27 years ago. We've had it for a really long time. And they're still there every day. And from there, I went to school for journalism in San Francisco. And I went to Italy on a journalism internship. And I actually fell in love with pizza there. And I came back and I was trying to make my own pizza at home, like reading everything out there and like going to all the pizzerias and trying to figure out what the secret was. Little did I know there's so many secrets and everyone does it a little bit differently.
But you were exactly on your own pizza quest, basically.
I was on my own pizza quest, exactly. And it was right around the time that Tony was opening his San Francisco location, his flagship shop. And he was offering classes. So I took one of his pizza classes and I just hounded him with questions. And finally, at the end of the course, I somehow convinced him to hire me because, you know, it's amazing to take these classes and have this knowledge, but I'm the kind of person who really needs to put it into like a hands-on thing. And was just like astounded by Tony and his knowledge. And like,
this must have been about 10 years ago then, because that's when we were actually filming Tony the first time for Pizza Quest.
It was around 10 years ago.
That is amazing. So, but let's go back to Italy for one second before we move forward, because while you were there, did you have any, pizza experiences of note, that kind of like were the benchmarks for you or places that really stood out that have guided you since?
You know, it's interesting because when I was in Italy, I wasn't in some of the more famed areas. Well, I mean, since then I have traveled and been to Naples and Rome and all these fabulous, like, known pizza cities. But when I was there, I was actually in the Marche region, which is, they're known for so many other things and they have fantastic pizza, but I don't think it's like the cuisine that people go there for. Uh-huh. And I traveled a bunch and I had pizza everywhere, but honestly, like, I didn't go to like any of the famous pizzerias at that point. What was that?
Not on that trip.
Not on that trip. Since then, I have been.
You over there so, as a journalist then? Was that what brought you to Italy initially?
Yeah, so I was there on like a journalism internship, and I always kind of wanted to integrate food. Like, I wanted to go for food journalism. I got like I worked at the San Francisco Chronicle for a little bit on another internship and in their food department. And in Italy, I was writing about like the whole slow food movement when I was there. And I think that was really it, was like that connection to food there that made me even more interested in cooking and restaurants and the pizza, I think, was the epitome of it, because it's kind of like you have this super simple food, but you can do so much with it. And it's such like a beautiful, just like a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it, how this kind of humble peasant food has become maybe the food of this era now for us in a whole new way.
Exactly. Yeah, but I was just taken aback by it, and I just loved it. And
well, I want to come back to this journalism background and the writing background later, as we kind of pursue this, because I can't help but think that there's got to be a book in your future here, and it's got to be maybe on your to-do list. But you know, but now let's get back to San Francisco. So you were with Tony for how long? Like, you weren't there just there for a year. You did a full on.
Yeah, I was there, I think, like 3 or 4 years, and then he opened a place in New York, and I moved there to help with that.
Wow, that's nice.
With one of his partners, and then when that one didn't quite work out, I moved back to Boulder. And then that was kind of like always in my head, my plan. I guess plans change, but it's kind of like always to have my own place and to be home, or, you know, in Boulder.
Nice. Now, your family still got their bagel operation in Boulder. Do you guys work together any time on projects or help each other out?
Yeah. So my brother is actually my business partner in my pizza place. He does all the business side of it.
He's been in the family. I love it.
he's fantastic at that, and we work really well together. And my pizza place is actually right next to like our original bagel store, so we're constantly back and forth. You know, if I forget something, we run out of something
But you never like get the call like in the middle of the night, Audrey, we need you on the bagel line for like 40 minutes. Just come on over.
I mean, thankfully, no. But there's definitely mornings when I walk in and it's slammed, and I'm like, I need to help them. Like, it's good to have both. And my dad actually tried to do pizza at the bagel places at one point, because he's from New York and like loves pizza. It's like his favorite food. I mean, apart from bagels.
Yeah, right. Well, if you're from New York, you know, you have to be in love with pizza. Boulder itself is becoming, you know, an amazing restaurant city. I mean, it has been for a while, but you've got some great pizzerias in Boulder.
Boulder, we used to have more. There's been a few that closed this year, but the ones that are here are fantastic.
Well, we did a lot of filming over at Basta with Kelly Whitaker. We've interviewed with Kelly here on Pizza Talk, so he's, you know, his episode may already be up by the time, you know, yours gets up there. But so we know Kelly's pizza, but when I was there filming with him, and again, that was like 8 years ago, you didn't have the pizza garage.
We weren't open yet. Yeah, he's doing some amazing things. He's part of this whole Colorado movement called the Grain Chain, and they're really trying to promote planting wheat in Colorado and in the Boulder area, and like using more localized wheat, which is really cool. And Kelly's an amazing chef in general. So
are you drawn into that whole movement as well? Do you experiment with range?
Yeah, I have been a lot more. One of the main guys, Andy, he owns, have you heard of the bakery Moxie Bread?
Andy Clark, yeah.
Andy Clark, of course.
Yeah, he's a friend. Yeah, I love the, in fact, Andy and I had dinner together at Kelly's place.
Oh, did you?
Awesome. Yeah, and he makes fabulous bread.
Oh my God, it's incredible. Yeah, so he actually just opened a new, well, it's a mill in Boulder. So his place is in Louisville right now, and they just opened in North Boulder. And so people can actually go and buy like freshly milled flour and like all these different grains. It's pretty cool. And he's brought me a bunch of different ones to play around with. And I'm just now trying to incorporate a percentage of it into ours. So like I bought like one of his little mock mills that he does, but it's hard because we have like a 1200 square foot place, it'd be hard to put like a full mill in there.
Right.
We're lucky to have him where we can just buy it. You know?
Not like a volume producer, but you can make what you need for a small batch right there on the spot.
Yeah, exactly. And I use it a lot for breads more than the pizza. And actually, whenever I compete, I use it.
You do bread. You do your own breads at the pizza garage as well, right?
We do. So we do like sub rolls. We have like, you know, every restaurant has their lease contingencies. So there's a bakery right in our complex, so we're not really technically allowed to sell a huge volume of bread.
You gotta be careful, but you can make it for your own sandwiches.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I know grinders are a big part of the menu. We want to talk more about, you know, Audrey's Pizza Garage, because you went, then you got after this journey with Tony in New York, and then you're back in Boulder. So when did you open Audrey's Pizza Garage, and why is it called the Pizza Garage?
So we opened in 2015, and I always loved garages. Like, I always kind of had this idea we would kind of gut out an actual gas station or garage and, like, have the pizzeria there. But as it turns out, it's a lot of work and a lot of money to, like, dig out the gas pumps. And
right.
It just wasn't very logical. And we actually looked for, like, 2 years for this space. Like, Boulder is very hard to find a restaurant space. It's very expensive. And we finally came upon this place, and we came up with a bunch of different ideas for names, and a lot of them were taken. I don't know if anyone's tried to name a restaurant, but a lot of great names are already taken, for good reason. And I wanted to just...
Nobody had Pizza Garage, right?
No, there was a garage pizza in LA. That was the only one. But we were going to call it the Pizza Garage, and then my dad insisted on having my name in it as well.
That's your dad, right?
Yes, it is. And at first, I really didn't
like that
because I don't like that much attention drawn to me. But I think it's definitely given the place character to, like, have a name attached.
I love the name. I mean, it's like, first of all, it's memorable. You know, and immediately your mind starts to go, I got to check this place out. I mean, what the heck is a pizza garage, you know, and who is this Audrey? So do people come there and I obviously you're like also the head pizzaiola, right? You're making the pizzas. Okay. You're there all the time, I imagine.
I am there a lot. Yeah.
You get to interact a lot with people that.
Yeah. So we're very like fast casual.
Sought you out.
Yeah, it's nice. It's small enough where you can always see everyone, and we've got so many regulars that we know by name, and it's great. I actually really like it. We kind of changed the concept because we're close to a middle school, and in Colorado, like, the law is 500 feet, and you can't have alcohol. So we were going to do more of a sit-down concept, and then we're like, we'll just change it to a slice house, and it's really worked in our favor, I think. Boulder, like, you went to BAFTA, there's Locale, and they're all a little... they're not fine dining. They're still pizzerias, but, you know, they're sit down with table service.
Yeah.
So I think it distinguished us a little bit in that aspect because Boulder didn't have like a, well, they have some slice houses, but not quite what we're doing.
Well, the fact that you are a slice house plays into a sort of a discussion I want to have with you, maybe in our next episode with you, which is so many of the restaurants have had to pivot during this COVID era. And as a slice house, in a sense, you were already kind of in the mode, I would think.
Yes. Yeah. We got really lucky in that as well. We didn't really have to, like, I know a lot of people changed their model completely, and we didn't really have to at all. And as you know, in the name, the Pizza Garage, we have these huge garage doors in the front. So we just, like, locked our doors and have switched our registers to be in the garage doors, and everything's going through there. So there's like no contact. And
interesting.
It's phenomenal.
Let's find that one out next, but more fully in the next episode. It's kind of like a tease, so we can get everyone to come back on the next episode because we want to hear more about that. But again, I'm going to backtrack again back to, like, so you got launched with the pizzas themselves, and so is it more of like a New York style pizza? When you hear slice house, you usually think New York style. Is that the predominant style, or do you do other styles as well?
Yeah, so we do predominantly New York style, or we call it that because you have to give it a name, but we get a lot of New Yorkers in there that are, you know, very skeptical on what technically New York.
Well, they're not going to believe it, and especially if it's not in New York, that it's going to be as good as New York.
Yeah, and they're like, well, are you from New York? I was like, no, I'm from Boulder.
You're right.
They don't love that, I don't think. But
during your training at Tony's, and not only, I guess, at the school, but, you know, working there right at Tony's where he makes every style of pizza, you're probably conversant in all those different styles as well. Why did you settle on that particular style? Is it just your own sort of...
It's interesting because actually when I was at Tony's, I did mainly Neapolitan. Like, that was my focus there, and I was always on the Neapolitan line, so... I had a little experience in New York, but I never really worked the New York line. And I think it was just, I think we were just trying to kind of distinguish ourselves and like fit the model that our restaurant was. And my brother kind of pushed it too. Like initially I wanted to do mostly Sicilian pizza, to be honest. So we serve Sicilian in New York, but Sicilian's a very small portion compared to the New York.
So you do Sicilian as well.
Yeah.
That's a different kind of audience in a sense for Sicilian style.
It definitely is. Yeah. We have a very specific group of people who get it, like people who seek it out and love it. And then some people think it's like too bready, but I think if you eat it and you know it's like actually it looks thick, but it's very light and airy.
Well, when I think of Boulder and that whole Boulder area, Denver and, you know, everywhere in that region, I constantly think of farm to table and that the relationships that restaurant owners have with local producers. Do you develop those kinds of rapports as well?
Yeah, we do. We try and do seasonal, but we also have a lot of just like standard menu items since we are more of a slice house.
So you create, what are your, perhaps your signature pies?
So we do one called the Spicy Pig, sausage, pepperoni, and jalapeno. That's probably our most famous one. We actually have a lot of veggie pies. People definitely seek those out. One's called the Green Mountain, and it's like a pile of spinach and then ricotta and garlic and Castel Volturno olives and basil.
That's good. Right now I can use a slice of that.
Yeah. Lately we've gotten a lot more requests for like vegan pie, which we just now started carrying vegan cheese. I've never loved vegan cheese. I think I've never had a really good one, but I think people, there's been a lot of progress in that department as well.
Like, yeah, everybody's getting better.
Yeah. What was that? Sorry.
Everyone's getting better at producing, vegan, high quality vegan products because, especially cheese, which is tricky.
Yeah.
But, you know, where there's a demand, there is innovation.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the one we're using is like coconut based, which it actually tastes really good. I mean, I love vegan food. I just feel like if you're not going to, if it's not good cheese, like just don't have any cheese.
Well, like you do a tomato pie, right?
Totally, yeah. And we did one with like a bunch of veggies and like pumpkin seeds. And then we do like a vegan pesto. I think there's like so many ways to do it. It's just, you know, as long as it tastes good.
Well, that's it. It comes down to flavor in the end.
Totally.
So clearly your clientele, you know, loves what you're doing there. About how many pizzas a day are you producing?
It all depends. like this past Friday night, I think we did like 400 pizzas, which is a lot for us.
That's not a small amount. What kind of ovens are you doing them in?
We've always had an electric oven. December, we just got a new Pizza Master, which has been life-saving.
A lot of people seem to be really raving about the Pizza Masters. It seems to be the oven of the day.
It, for a good reason, though. Like, I had my doubts, but it's shocking how well it maintains its heat and comes back and just, I'm astounded. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, it's an electric oven, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've always had an electric oven. I've always been, Tony had him at his place. Like, he has every oven, but I was always kind of drawn to that electric oven because it's almost like a hybrid between the wood-fired and a New York style, I think. You know, it cooks in like 6 minutes and we only have it at like 625, whereas the oven goes up to like 930 degrees or something.
So you can do a lot of different types of pizzas in that oven. And exactly. I've always wondered about this because I haven't baked in one. Does each deck in that oven have its own controls? Can you have different temperatures on different decks?
Exactly. So yeah, our bottom, we kind of keep for our slices and Sicilians and we have it at 550 and then the top two are at like 625 for the New Yorks.
And so you're not actually doing pure Neapolitan because you don't have you don't have a wood fired oven, but are you doing any pizzas?
Yeah, we call it New York, but I think it's a little more of a hybrid than traditional New York.
So it's really your pizza is what it is, really.
Exactly. But, you know, I find that people need some kind of label to define it. You know, like they want to know what kind of pizza they're getting.
What's it like? They always wanted to know what's it like. In fact, when you're pitching like a book concept to a publisher, they always want you to, in the proposal, what books is it similar to, but how is yours different? They always want to know how it's different as well as why it's similar.
That's such a good, yes. Well stated.
Well, remember that when you make your book proposal.
I will. I'll just be calling you for advice.
Well, definitely. I just think it's exciting what you've done, what you've created. And, you know, before we run out of time on this segment, didn't you also compete? Were you on the World Pizza Champions team?
I am, yeah. I've been on it since I was at Tony's, which is a huge honor because there's so many amazing pizza makers on that team.
So what categories do you compete in?
I usually compete in traditional. I feel like until I really place well in traditional, I like can't. I don't know. I've got weird things. Like, I know a lot of people, like, compete in different ones all the time, but I like very, I feel like the simple pizza is what really shows your pizza, to me at least. But,
well, I like, that's why the margarita is such a, you know, is the benchmark of all pizzas. It's the vanilla ice cream of pizza.
I agree. And actually, I mean, that being said, I've competed in pan and Neapolitan in Italy, just not at Pizza Expo. Because.
So for those who are watching this and are not familiar with the competitions or haven't been to Expo and seen you or other people in those, what is the difference between the Neapolitan category and the traditional category? Because a lot of people think that those are the same thing.
So Neapolitan has very strict rules. It has to be like STG approved down to like the tomatoes, the type of flour. I think even the ingredients on top, like it can either be like a marinara, a margarita, or maybe just those two.
Yeah.
No. And it has to cook in 90 seconds. They like time you. You have to be, I think, STG certified. Where the traditional
STG, can you explain what that is for those who don't know?
Yeah, so it's like an association in Italy that if you probably could explain this better than me.
Well, I always heard it as VPN, but that sounds like it's different.
Is that STG VPN? Don't quote me on this. It's been a while.
Probably just different organizations.
It's VPN. So VPN is Vera Pizza Association, is that?
Yeah, Vera Pizza Napolitana.
Pizza Napolitana, yeah.
But there are so many associations over there, and everyone thinks that theirs is the only one and the best one, so I don't know which one, you know, which one rules
now,
over.
Now that you're saying this, I think you're right. I think it is VPN.
Because I've never competed in these competitions. I just like to eat and judge, you know, them, but I'm not young enough anymore to like, you know, go after those. And when you think about the World Pizza Championship, I always thought of that team initially as the Dough Acrobats. That's what, you know, sort of, that's what Tony was first known for. And a lot of his proteges were first competing in the showmanship area. And then now all of a sudden it's really shifted over to the craftsmanship of the pizza itself.
Yeah. And I mean, I think people are still the acrobats. I think that was kind of, I never was coordinated enough to be an acrobat.
It takes a lot of practice.
Yes. They're very talented, the pizza acrobats. I love them.
And also you have to kind of like be willing to put it all out there and be, you know, totally uninhibited.
Totally. No, I mean, it's amazing. It's like it's amazing what they can do. But yeah, I think people have focused a lot on the baking just because it shows a different set of skills. And it's, you know, it's really representing your pizzeria when you go. But
so has competing gotten you over to Italy, and you compete over there in those championships?
Yeah. We were supposed to go this year, but sadly.
Put on hold. Where are they usually held, or does it move around?
So it's interesting. The first year I went with Tony, it was in Salsa Maggiore, and now it's in Parma. And the Caputos just started a Caputo Cup in Naples as well. Well, actually, I think it's been going on, but they just added an American category. So that's really cool as well.
Yeah. And, you know, the Caputos have been so proactive, you know, not just with their flour, but in helping to spread the gospel of pizza and the gospel of, you know, of pasta as well.
Yeah, they're amazing. So
it's kind of a cool horse to ride on because they get you to a lot of places. You can travel the world with the Caputo family.
That is true. I mean, they're such a great company and family, both.
Well, this has been really fun talking about all this. And I think, you know, what I'd like to do is, since we're running out of time for this segment, come back and continue with you in the next segment. And we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, where you're at today and the future. And again, explore it a little more deeply how you're dealing with and in association with all of your neighboring, you know, friends compadres in the restaurant industry dealing with the challenges of the COVID era. Stick around for more Pizza Quest after a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back to Pizza Talk. I'm Peter Reinhart, and I'm with Audrey Sherman of Audrey's Pizza Garage in Boulder, Colorado. In our last episode, Audrey told us a little bit about her story, her journey, the time she spent with Tony in San Francisco, and it was almost like, for you, an apprenticeship, in a sense, in the pizza world.
I feel like he's my mentor.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you're even on the team that he coaches, right? Let's go to the Pizza Champions team. That's a great group to be in. In fact, we also had a great talk with Laura Meyer recently. And I know you must have worked really closely with her in San Francisco at some point during your time at Tony's, right?
You know, we actually just missed each other. I was there before her, and then she came after. It's just the last year or two I've gotten really close to her, and I'm actually sad I did miss her, because every time I'm around her, I learned so much, and she's just such an incredible person in general, like all around.
Yeah, well, you both are. You both, are so dedicated and focused. There's a laser focus, and I think it's also notable that you're two very successful women in the pizza business, and I'm wondering what that's like in traditionally a male-dominated sector. Are you starting to see more of it opening up to women, and how challenging was it for you to kind of try to rise up in that kind of a culture?
Yeah, it's interesting, because before I was in pizza, I worked in a lot of other kitchens, and I think it was almost more challenging in the other kitchens than I've had in pizza. And I don't know if that's because I've been surrounded by such amazing men, really, like Tony in specific, who, he didn't really look at you as a female. He just looked at you as a really great pizza maker. And I think that, there's this huge women in pizza movement happening right now, which is phenomenal. And I think it's really important, because it's going to get us to the place where, like, people aren't just highlighting women. They're just, like, highlighting pizza makers. Because right now, like, women need to be highlighted because they've been kind of shoved to the side, I think. But I really do think I've been lucky, because I have been surrounded by people who always have, like, embraced my love of pizza and talent, and have always supported that. And maybe it's harder for some other people who don't have those kind of, like, mentors or people in their lives.
Well, I know that when we go to, when we all get together at a place like Expo, there doesn't seem to be any distinctions anymore, in terms of gender distinctions. Everyone's sort of, it's a big welcoming, open 10-flap community. And then we even see some serious pizza enthusiasts, like Norma Knepp, who is not, she's a professional. She has her own little pizza operation of her own in Pennsylvania Dutch country, and she won the Caputo Cup the first year she ever entered. But again, under the radar as far as the rest of the world knows, and now we're beginning to see I'd say maybe this next period of time could be sort of the rise of the women pizzaiolas kind of taking center stage. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right, and it's interesting, because at my place, at least, I have, it kind of ebbs and flows on, like, if I have more men working there, or women, and I've actually noticed, like, a lot of the women are better pizza makers. Like, they have, like, a little bit softer touch, and the pizza just looks, like, gorgeous. Not everyone, it differs by each person, but I think you're right. I think like women, the more they see other females in the industries, the more they gravitate to it. And in the 10 years I've been in the industry, I do think it's changed a lot. Like the first few years I was with Tony, we went to Naples to, he did like a demo for one of the Caputo cups there and I was helping him. And I was like working the oven and one of the Neapolitan guys just like shoved me aside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Old school. Yeah.
And they didn't think I should be there. And it was actually like Roberto Caprusco. Excuse me, I'm probably butchering his last name.
Roberto from in New York, Caprusco.
Yes. And he's the one who kind of like, him and Tony like helped me out there. And this past year going to Naples, like you could definitely see a shift. Like there are a lot more female pizza makers, a lot like mixed in with everyone, not just from the United States, but Naples and Japan and, you know, everywhere. I think it's definitely evening out. I think we still have a long way to go, but I think just seeing, you know, like Laura, she's a huge presence in the industry. She's always doing demos and teaching and just making pizza in general. And I think it's like encouraging other people to, you know, want to own their own businesses and just work in the industry and learn the craft.
Well, I think when you have a mentor like Tony Gemignani, who has such tremendous drive and he's sort of resilient and never seems to run out of energy, and it takes that kind of, you know, dedication, I think, and perseverance to break through. And that's I think is what's happening now. Maybe in the past it was just so hard that it was too easy to get knocked down and then you kind of give up, but now I think you see that if you're going to succeed, you've got to be resilient, and you got to be able to, you know, get pushed around by some of those Naples pizza guys and say, I'm coming back anyway. You're not going to get rid of me that easy.
That's so true. And whenever I'm exhausted, I'm like, I have one place and Tony has like all these other places. How does he do this every day?
I think everybody asks that question, and not everybody can do that. It's, you know, it's a special gift, and some people are just born with that relentless energy. But even have one place, and I had one restaurant. I never could handle having more than one. It took everything I had, and I always marveled at the fact that somebody could, you know, have enough people, maybe a support team around them, to be able to operate in two or three different venues or five or six venues at, you know, at the same time. One takes it all.
It definitely does, I feel like in this day and age too, with the social media, it's, at least to me, it's like really inspiring and to see what everyone else is doing and to stay connected, because like you said, at Pizza Expo, you see everyone and it's like, it's so great to be around people who are going through exactly what you're going through and have like the extreme like passion for what they're doing the same as you. And at a time like this, like you can still get on Instagram, you can still call these people, and I think it keeps you going in a sense, you know, and it inspires you every day to like do different things and like keep pushing through.
Well, I think, you know, it goes back to this resilience and relentlessness that it takes to survive in this industry. The hospitality and restaurant industry is brutal on everybody. And I think you not only have to have the talent, but you do have to have a level of passion that allows you to endure. Now, your passion was born, it sounds like, you know, from childhood. I think I read that your mom made some kind of a pizza with sesame crust or something like that. Yeah. Do you do anything like that at the garage?
Yeah, so that's our version of a grandma pizza. But I call it, my mom's name is Patty, so I call it Patty style.
Ah, there you go.
And it's basically a pan pizza with sesames on the bottom, and it's not a Sicilian, it's closer to a grandma. It's just, well, you know, it's a little different. I've never made Detroit style pizza, but I imagine it as a hybrid between a grandma and a Detroit, because we rim the edge with cheese and it's like got that cheese crust and
yeah. So it is kind of it's a tribute pizza, first of all, to your mom, sounds like, which adds another level of connection or connectivity to, you know, to what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I think that's what I'm really trying to get at here is why do you work this hard? You know, what is it inside of you that brings you back each and every day to fight the fight? And sounds like one piece of the puzzle is sort of these connections, a family connection. Your pizza restaurant is right next door to the family bagel restaurant, right?
Cafe.
Yeah.
No, but I think you are right. Like, you definitely have to have that fight in you, and you really have to want it. At the beginning of this whole, like, COVID situation, we were really close in our, like, business complex with all the other business owners, and there's a woman who owns a salon next door, and she was like, she had to shut down completely because that was the government, you know, regulations. And she's like, yeah, I just went home and I asked myself, like, do I want to, you know, just, I could just close. Like, we could just shut down now. And that, like, my family would be okay because, you know, my husband works. And she's like, but do I want to fight for it? And it really resonated because I was like, yeah, like, that's how I feel every day, you know, especially during this time. Like, is this something worth fighting for? Do I want to go in and, like, you know, fight for my business? Because especially in these times, you have to actually want to do it.
And how have you done it? Because it has been a brutal for everybody out there. How have you managed to make that pivot?
I think one of the biggest things was, like, right off the bat, we, you know, required everyone to wear face masks and gloves and, like, had sanitizer, like, wiping down everything. And I think the first step was, like, really making our customers feel safe. You know, like, I think one of the biggest things of restaurants is it's a safe space and it's an enjoyable space. And that's why people want to come and eat your food. And I think that was huge for us because we've had a lot of repeat customers. You know, they started in the beginning and then they felt like it was safe for them to keep coming back. And I think the fact that we already were mainly takeout, that was also huge for us because it wasn't a huge shift of our model. You know, we already were like,
have some sit down in addition to the takeout. You had tables too. Right?
Yeah, we were pretty
like the max before all this. What was your max capacity? And when it reopens, what do you think it'll be?
I think we could fit like 30 people. That's tight, but it's comical because we just put in like a community table in the center, not using that anymore.
That's the big issue, yeah.
Yeah, and actually today is the first day Colorado just said restaurants could reopen, I think 50% capacity, but our whole dining room is like storage space right now. We ended up having to bring in like a pallet of flour and a pallet of tomatoes because we were having some issues in the beginning, like sourcing it. Not even sourcing it, just like our purveyor wasn't,
So you needed to have back stock, which means that a lot of restaurant space is now warehouse space for you in a sense.
It all is.
Do you see going back to the restaurant model then, or would you think you'll just keep focusing on the curbside and the takeout?
Yeah, so I think at least through the summer we're going to stay just takeout. We're lucky enough that we have a pretty big patio in the front of our restaurant, so people can grab a slice and go sit down, and they're all spaced out. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see how it plays out, and we're going to wait at least until we get through the summer to reopen the dining room, especially because if it's like 25-50% capacity, it's really not worth it to us to, you know, have to like sanitize every single inch of the restaurant every time somebody leaves.
Right.
You can only have like 3 people in the restaurant.
I'm telling you, I've talked to a number of pizza operators who were saying, I'm not sure that I'm ever going to go back to the dining program that we had before, that we're doing well with this approach, with the, you know, with focusing on takeout and, in some ways they're making more money now than they were before. That's rare in this time when so many restaurants are going under, but the pizza restaurants seem to be the ones who have been able to pivot. Are surviving and maybe thriving.
Yeah, we've been definitely busier. It's been
interesting. Yeah.
It's been, you know, it's, I'm so thankful. I'm also exhausted, but
very you thankful. Work in like long days, yeah.
No, it's been great.
And we didn't have the break. You know, usually in March, everybody in the business gets at least a 5-day break by going to Vegas and gathering with the tribe and having a pizza expo together, and we don't get that this year.
No, that's so true. I know, I miss everyone.
I know. I think when it finally does reconvene, whenever that happens to be, there's going to be so much relief. I think there's going to be, if they allow it, there's going to be a lot of hugging.
I think you're right.
Well, I've talked to, you know, like I said, a number of operators who are not going back to the old model. They're going to just stay, you know, doing what they're doing. And I think the whole industry, probably hospitality industry, is going to be reevaluating, you know, how we do hospitality in the future going forward.
I think you're right. Yeah. It's, it's sad. I mean, for me at least, it's sad to see all these restaurants closed, and I hope they reopen. Boulder is such like a dining, not mecca, but it's become known, really well known for its dining, and in particular, its sit-down dining. So it'll be interesting. A few of the, you know, fine dining places have pivoted and have done really well with it, I think. I hope.
Well, you know, when I think of Boulder, one of the things I love about Boulder is it's such a green city. And Boulder it always gets voted either number one or number two greenest city in America, meaning that they're very conscious politically and environmentally in doing the right things, doing things the right way. I won't say politically correct. I'll just say doing things the right way. Almost to the point where it can make other people crazy, you know, because you know, it's like going to the extreme. And so I would imagine, you know, trying to go back to a model that has so much baggage attached to it now. The model, I mean, there was an article that came out of the New York Times saying, does the whole restaurant industry, you know, is this the end of the restaurant industry as we've known it? And I don't know what the answer is to that, except that I know that it seems like the pizza sector of that industry is maybe leading the way through this darkness.
I think you're right. It's interesting. At the beginning of the pandemic, when we started to get really busy, my husband was like, he's like, after this is all over, there's going to be so many people that want to just buy up all these pizzerias because they're the only ones like really doing well. I was also thinking about it because we've been getting some takeout, and like pizza is such a contained thing. Like all these other places, they need so many different containers to do takeout. Whereas pizza, you know, it's a box. If you get a salad, it's like one more container. Whereas other types of cuisine, you have like 20 different containers that maybe they'll come up with some new to-go stuff for that as well. But that's true.
Well, before we run out of time, in our last episode, we mentioned that you started out as a journalist major and were doing a journalism internship in Italy when you kind of like started to have this desire or awakening to go back into the restaurant business, which your family's already was in the bagel business. So you must still have that sort of writer's itch to want to articulate and journal the experiences that you're having. Are you doing anything with that?
Yeah. So actually the last few months I've been lucky enough, I've been writing a little bit for Pizza Today. They've given me some space to do like in the kitchen articles, which I love.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's a great way in, you know, or it's a great way to kind of reawaken that gift.
And it's interesting because, like, I haven't written in so many years, but it took, like, a few months of the articles, and now I just, like, I really enjoy it. Like, it is
like on a bike. Once you've done it, you can get back on that bike. You just need to know what it is that you want to say. I know that I was actually a film major when I went to college, and I had some opportunities to work in the film industry, but I also had an opportunity right at the end of that college period to work in a organic vegetarian restaurant. This is back in 1970, so before any of that was, you know, was big, and all of a sudden I felt like I could go into film, but I don't know what it is that I have to say, but I could do this restaurant thing, which is like exciting this passion in me, and we'll see where it leads. So I kind of abandoned one to follow the other muse, and then about 20 years later when I did my first book, I said, you know what, I think I finally have something to write about. I wanted to be a film writer, and bread became my sort of metaphor. And I think as a writer, which, you know, you're not just a restaurant operator and a pizza maker, but you're also a writer. You're always going to want to write. It's just a matter of finding something that excites you as much as pizza does to be able to write about it. Maybe writing about pizza is the way in, but I get the sense that there's also something, you know, like if you were going to write, not for Pizza Today, but just write an article about, you know, or a book about, you know, sort of what your current vision and passions are, what do you think those things would be? Do you have sort of a sense of what you would want to say to the world about that you've learned by being in the pizza game, but also have writing skills?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously I always want to write about pizza because it's my number one focus and love, but I've always really been into like kind of the investigative food journalism aspect. Like right now I keep trying to figure out a way, you know, there's all, as probably everyone's aware, like all of this food that's being wasted because everyone's just dumping it. And I keep trying to figure out a way, like, how can we help? And like, how do we shift this? And there are certain organizations, but maybe it's like writing about it. And like, that's a way of figuring it out. But I don't know that I'd write a whole book about it, but maybe when I have figuring out more time to like try and write for other publications as well.
Maybe just some pieces. Like you say, and what was the name of the grain organization that you mentioned, Kelly Whitaker's?
The Colorado Grain Chain.
A grain chain, which is a great name in its own right. It's,
And actually, we're doing some like online classes and seminars on different people right now. And honestly, I've been working every time they're airing, but they sound really interesting.
Well, that's a trade-off when you have your own business, you know.
Yes.
But you're in the right place, you know, a community like Boulder, where something like the Grain Chain, you know, which is a coalition of people that are trying to change the way we eat and approach the environment and food, you know, you're in the right place to be writing about that and certainly be a part of that other community. You know, it's like, like there's the big pizza community, which is what you call the tribe, but then there are smaller communities within that community that are very focused and specific.
That's so true. And I think I've been like such a part of the pizza community that it's only in like the last year or two that I've been like trying to get more involved with, you know, the people just right by me, which is sounds so silly, but sometimes it's easier to, you know, be around or like connect with people that are in your exact industry than people that are so close to you.
Well, it's going to happen, you know, for you. Well, in an organic way, because you're that's how you've lived your life, and it's going to just bubble up when the time is right. So keep those writing skills, keep your diaries going and your journals and blogging and everything else. Keep that muscle exercise, because then when you're ready, and you want to make a statement, you know, you'll have the ability and the skills that not everybody has. Not everybody, and I know, and I can say this to you because I know that you've studied this and prepared for this in your earlier life. Not everybody has that skill set. And so to bring together a culinary skill set and an ability to articulate and write well is a rare gift, and the world really wants more and more content like that. So I'm looking forward to see the next wave for you. I mean, this has been...
Well, you're an inspiration to me. So.
Well, thank you, but you as well to me. You know, you've been on like this 10-year journey since we first connected way back in San Francisco till now. And you're still young, you know. To me, you're like, oh my God, you could be my like granddaughter. You know,
I'm feeling older these days.
Well, we all get there, but I love the energy and I love what you're doing, and I just have a feeling that there's, you know, another act to follow this act that will be sort of the next phase and the next stage of your journey. We'll be right back with more Pizza Quest right after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
I'm Peter Reinhardt. Welcome back to Pizza Talk. I'm with Audrey Sherman from Audrey Jane's Pizza Garage in Boulder, Colorado. Is that right?
Yes. And thanks for having me again.
Full name. And we had a couple of sessions with you where we talked about the whole evolution of the pizzeria and you know how you kind of have come to this present moment, how you're pivoting to deal with the COVID thing. But one thing that really kind of stood out was a couple of your signature pizzas. You mentioned one called the patty, right? Is that what you call it, the patty?
It's our patty style pizza.
Audrey, could you tell us a little bit about the sort of the name and the idea of what you're trying to do with the patty?
Of course. So the patty style is a version, my version of a grandma pizza. It's named after my mom, Patty, because it's what she made us as kids. And when I was little, I didn't really associate it with being a grandma pizza. I grew up in Colorado, so it wasn't like we had grandma style pizza at every pizzeria here. After I opened my pizza place, we didn't do it initially, and then I kept coming back to it, and she made it. It's basically a pan pizza with sesame seeds on the bottom. And so I was playing around with it, and we kind of settled on the version that we do now. And it's actually kind of an evolving thing. It's become more and more popular, and it's a pizza that's a little hard to keep up with when we're busy because we don't par-bake it right now. And I've talked to, like, Tony about it, and he's a huge fan of par-baking, which I am coming around to more and more because it makes a lot more sense in the end.
Especially if you're busy.
From a business perspective, I think, because it doesn't take as long in the oven. It holds up a little bit better. So we actually just are on a new Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives episode, and it's featuring the patty style. So I'm trying to figure out a way to kind of streamline it and make it so that we can make more a day and not run out and not have it, like, hold up the oven.
I remember when I was first kind of looking into the difference between, say, a grandma pizza and a Sicilian pizza. I mean, they look so similar. And one differentiation was that some people said, well, the Sicilian really lends itself to the par bake, and most places do a par bake. And the grandma is usually a single bake all the way through. And so it was a good way to kind of differentiate them. There were some other differences. The grandma usually had the cheese down first, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that on Umberto's and King Umberto's, when they started years and years ago, these ideas, it was a single bake. And when you ordered it, you knew that you were going to have to wait 25 minutes for your pizza. And you sat at the table and you ate your salad and other things while you waited. But nowadays, people don't want to wait, number one. And two, there's not enough room in the kitchen to keep up with the pizzas if you have to do a full bake like that. So have you noticed a difference when you do a par bake versus a single bake in terms of the final product?
Yeah, I mean, and you're exactly right. I think that is, like, the definition, and I think that's what I also love about the patty, is that the biggest difference to me is that the Sicilian is, you know, it's very big and puffy, but it's, like, so light and airy because it rises for so long, and then it has that par bake. So it's completely cooked all the way through. The patty is a little bit denser, and it's almost like a fried dough because it is a little bit thinner, and there's that oil in the crust. And because it does do that single bake, it's not quite as light and airy, which I love. Like, that's one of my favorite styles of pizza. But I've done it, you know, both ways with the par bake, and the par bake actually tastes really good too.
Doesn't dry out or get more tough because of the second bake?
It is a little bit, but our Sicilians, we rise them overnight and then do the par bake, and I think that, and we saran wrap them, and it kind of, like, traps in that moisture. Have you talked to Chris Decker at all from Metro?
Yeah, we've had Chris on. He's becoming almost like the Sicilian master now, you know, it's becoming one of his real focal points.
Amazing. Yeah. So when we were kind of reinventing our Sicilian, I was talking to him, and he gave me a few tips on it, and he actually, like, wraps them and freezes them, and he thinks, maybe not all of them, but he thinks that when it just, like, that moisture content, it actually, like, makes it not dry out that way. So I've been playing around with that a little bit. Maybe the grandmas will just have, like, a stack of them so we'll never run out. I don't know. Any suggestions?
Well, this is what I love about the whole pizza world is that we're always learning something new. You know, just when you think you got it all figured out, then someone says, no, you can also do this. And, you know, and you go, I hadn't thought of that. But we're still learning how to make it better and better and better after all these years. So I don't have a suggestion. I'm trying to learn from all of you guys, from what you've learned, because you're on the front lines, you're doing trial and error, and you're, you know, getting customer feedback. And usually the customers will tell us whether it works or not. And I don't have that luxury because I'm not running a pizzeria.
So much insight and knowledge. I'm still learning from you and all of your books.
we're all learning from each other, which is kind of a cool thing, and that's why Pizza Talk exists. But But why don't you take us through the patty, because the patty is like, it's become one of the signature pizzas of Audrey Jane's, right, of the Pizza Garage. This is one of the, it stays on the menu. It doesn't rotate in and out. It's a perennial, correct?
It is, yeah. It's kind of, it's not a set, like there's not set toppings on it. People can put whatever they want on it. So it's just like one of our styles of dough. So we do just like our traditional thin crust New York, we do our Sicilian, and then we do the patty style.
Well, if you don't mind showing us how you do it, we'd love to see one, and we'll try to enjoy it vicariously through the screen.
Of course, I would love to show you.
All right.
Let's get started.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, so I've been playing around with new pans. So this is a Lloyd pan. We were using Allied for our Sicilians, but I was having a little bit trouble finding them, to be honest. And I really like how the Lloyds cook. It's like just this last year I've been experimenting with them, and I've noticed that the dough really like fluffs up in them and cooks really nicely. So today we're using a Lloyd pan.
Lloyd pans have really made a big, sort of an entree into both the professional and the home pizza community. The nice thing about the Lloyd pans is that home bakers can get them off of Amazon and places like that and buy direct. So it's totally accessible.
Yeah, they're really good pans too. So so the first thing we're gonna do is use extra virgin olive oil on our pan. We've already made the dough. I think it'd be a little longer than the show how to show you how we do the dough, but
okay.
Got a dough ball over here. So rub the oil in. Make sure it's getting all sides of your pan. And we don't do a ton of sesame seeds because you don't want them not to stick to the pie. You don't have a ton extra. So it's just like a light coating.
These are sesame seeds you're putting on now?
Those are sesame seeds, yeah.
Okay, yeah, and that is
and
one
of
the...
That's kind of what makes our patty style a little different from like a traditional grandma.
Exactly, that's your unique tweak.
Yeah, and then this is our dough, so we do 100% sourdough. And we actually just started adding a little bit of freshly milled flour to it.
Oh.
Which we're buying from Andy from Moxie Bread.
Huh.
He just opened a mill in Boulder. Actually, it's funny, just this week or this last month, like 3 mills opened in Boulder.
Really?
And there's never been any mills in Boulder. Now it's just like this amazing plethora of fresh flour.
Milling is becoming the hot new thing, that's for sure. And,
totally.
And some pizzerias are even milling their own.
Yeah, you know, we have a little mock mill, and of course I would love to do it, but I don't think I could keep up with our dough production.
That's true.
So that you don't want to get any flour on it. Lay it in the pan, and a little bit of olive oil on top. And I've tried this a few different ways, too. I have stretched it on the marble because I was afraid that the sesame seeds would kind of, like, push to the side, but it's actually, you know... This kind of pushes the air bubbles out and makes it a little more even.
And so it looks pretty extensible. It's even though it's went in covering only about 60% of the pan, you're now already at like 95-98% of the coverage.
Our dough is pretty hydrated. We're at like now with the milled flour, we're up to about 68% hydration. Well, that's actually without our starter, so I think we're at about 73% hydration with starter.
That sounds nice, and it should puff up nicely at that kind of hydration levels.
Yeah. I know it's a little bit wetter than I think a traditional New York dough. So
yeah,
I mean I'm not.
Well, I
if
think
I'm totally honest. I never made New York style pizza before. I had my own pizzeria. I was more on the Neapolitan side of things.
Well, what we call traditional New York style, of course, that's changed now because the. What was traditional 20 years ago, you know, is also changing. But I think those doughs were in those days much less hydrated than today. And in this sort of new generation of pizza guys, they're borrowing from the artisan bread community and using
water
into the dough. Yeah,
that's so true. And I, you know, when I started playing around with the milled flour, my brother was like, "I like it, but it almost has like a bready flavor texture to it," which is something I really actually enjoy.
I like it. Yeah.
But he likes that more traditional, lighter, crisper dough.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this is looking pretty good. You don't want to overwork it. That whole idea of pan pizza, in my mind, is to kind of keep it really light and airy and get those nice bubbles in there. So I think a lot of people, at least in Boulder, kind of misassociate it with being a really heavy pizza, but they don't realize like how long it rises and how it's actually probably more digestible because of the long fermentation.
So are you saying this dough is going to rise in the pan before you top it?
Yeah, so before we bake it off, I usually let it rise for an hour or two, depending on how warm it is in here. Or if we par bake it, I still let it rise. Uh-huh. And I have one rising already, so you guys don't have to wait an hour.
Thank God, yeah, because I can't so wait that long.
This will normally go up on the oven, and this one, well, I didn't get here quite as early as I wanted, but this one you can see it's almost doubled, but this has been up there for about 40 minutes, so.
Nice. So normally you got your homemade
kufa. So this was a par bake. This one I let rise overnight. You can see the sesame is on the bottom.
You mean it just rose in the pan all night at room temperature?
Yes.
Wow.
And that's how we do our Sicilians too. So we can cook them both off, and you can see the difference between the par bake and the one time around.
Excellent.
So after we let it rise, I check it about 20 minutes in to see if we need to push it into the corners a little bit more because, you know, you don't want any space there. And then after that, I don't mess with it because I don't want to crush any of those nice air pockets that we create.
Right.
So today we are going to do, I call it an original tomato pie. That's the style that Tony taught me what it was original tomato pie with the sliced mozzarella on the bottom and then the sauce on top.
Okay.
And the patties I've never made Detroit-style pizza, but I know that the cheese kind of goes to the edge, and that's how we do our patties as well, because I really like that kind of cheese crust. It's not a huge cheese crust, it's just enough to get a little bit of crunch on the end.
Yeah, exactly. So you do get a little bit of that roll off of the sides.
It's
interesting, you know, when you think about it, you know, the Detroit style is very hot right now, and yet...
It is.
Break it down, they're all so similar to each other.
The
pans tend to be a little taller and maybe more cheese. Some people like to put cheese under the crust. They like to put a little Parmesan down on the pan itself and bake that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it's a style that I haven't explored, but I really need to because there's never enough time. But, you know, it's always good to learn new styles.
Once you're open for business, it's like less R&D and more serve the customers.
Yeah, right? It's so true.
Can you possibly tilt the camera a little bit down so we can see that? There you go. Perfect. So you're basically taking the cheese all the way out, covering fully the dough.
Fully. You got it, yeah. So I'm going to do the same thing on the par bake one.
And is that, by the way, is that just full-fat mozzarella?
You got it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we always use the full-fat.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And I never really understood why people use part skim, and then I think our cheese rep said that it's because a lot of people like that cheese pull, and the part skim is what creates that better than the full fat.
Oh, really? You get more?
Maybe
you get more
expert on that than me.
I didn't know that. I would have thought the opposite.
I would have too, and I've tried both, and I've tried like the East Coast Louise Grande, and I've tried like their East Coast blend, and I really just like the flavor of the full fat more.
Yeah.
So.
You can't beat the flavor of full fat, for sure.
You really can't. Okay. So we're just going to top this. This is a really simple pizza. We're just going to kind of stripe that cheese on top, or the sauce on top, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, we have a pretty basic tomato sauce. We use crushed tomatoes and a little super dolce. We use Stanislaus. So I think it's a little bit thicker than some people's blends, but...
It does look a little thicker, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it hard to spread because it's thick?
Is it what? No, it's not bad. It's kind of just, it's a little cold too. I just took it out of the walk-in, to be honest.
And I suppose because it is thicker, you have less problem of it running under the cheese and down the sides.
Totally, yeah. So I'm just going to stripe this on, and I'll just swap these out and do the non-parmesan.
I didn't ask you this, but what is the size, the dimensions of the pan, and what's the weight of the dough?
So this is a 14 by 14 pan, and the dough is 1.6 pounds. So what is that, like about 1,000 grams. Is that correct?
No, 1,000 grams would be 2 pounds.
Oh, okay, so this is so, like 750 about?
Yeah, and but say 1.6 pounds of dough?
Yes.
So that's like about 22 ounces maybe.
Okay, yes, you got it.
And that's and 14 by 14 pan.
14 by 14 pan, yeah. Okay. And actually I can show you our Sicilian pan. These are what we were using. These are the allied metal. These are, I think, 13 by 17.
Yeah, different dimensions, yeah. And so that one way to differentiate between the two pieces too, right? The different
exactly.
And same amount of dough goes in that pan?
No, sorry, Sicilians are a little bit more. They're 2.25 pounds.
Okay, yeah.
And we do it in pounds. The scale we have is always in pounds.
Well,
I know everyone's...
My mind still thinks in pounds and ounces, even though the world is mostly...
In grams.
And it's more accurate, and I try to encourage people to do that, but I in my mind still first defaults to to pounds and ounces. So
we have one leftover Sicilian.
So it's interesting because you've got the sauce done in sort of stripes across the surface of the pizza, but you're not going to actually try to spread it then to cover the cheese. You're just going to let it melt on its own.
Yeah.
So this is this is a day old Sicilian. This is from yesterday, but that's our Sicilian crust.
Focaccia in a way. Is it also all your crusts made with sourdough natural leavening, or do you use yeast in some?
No, everything's sourdough now.
Okay.
Yeah, so we switched about 2 years ago at this point. So we used to do a Biga method with yeast, with commercial yeast.
Yeah.
Which was still amazing. I love that method as well. I feel like sourdough is this never-ending exploration of learning, figuring it out,
and the world is coming. They used to say the future of bread lies in its past, and I think the same thing with pizza crust. This is the way it used to be done before the Fleischmann brothers came along and gave us instant yeast.
That's so true. All right. So then the last thing we're gonna do before we bake it is just a little bit of garlic oil. So it's just extra virgin olive oil and garlic.
You can never have too much of that.
That's what I think, too.
Oh, good. We think alike.
Never too much garlic. My dad's a huge fan of garlic butter and keeps trying to get me to use it.
Exactly.
Every year for his birthday, I make him like a compound garlic butter. So this is going to go in our oven. We're baking it at 575. The top heat's a little bit higher than the bottom, but the bottom's still at 5 and 7.
And if somebody wanted pepperoni, would that go on now or later?
Yeah, it'd go on now. You want me to throw some on?
No, it's up to you. I'm more interested in seeing the technique, but I'm just curious when the toppings go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So almost all of our meats, minus like our cured meats like prosciutto, go on first. Our sausage is raw, so we just hand pinch it on.
One is on the par bake and one is on the raw dough. Do they take different amount of time to finish?
Yeah, definitely. So the par bake will cook a lot quicker than the raw one. All right, so we'll just wait for those to cook. And we have.
What is the usual bake time for the par bake pizza?
The par bake, I believe it's around like 10 minutes.
So that's still a substantial amount of time. Even though it's fully baked, the crust looked like it was even caramelized. It was fully baked. But you got to wait for the cheese and sauce to catch up now.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it might be closer to 8 to 10 minutes.
And then how long for the unbaked crust and the full patty?
It's about 15 minutes on that.
So that's only a few minutes longer then, huh?
Yeah, it's not that much longer. But, a little bit of time helps. And I think it's also just the fact that, if you run out of the ones that you're rising, you have to re-push them out in service. We've done it all the different ways.
So that's what I was going to ask you if, currently, especially now that you've been pretty busy with the curbside and everything else, are you mainly making them on the par bake or are you still primarily doing them on the unbaked?
We're doing them unbaked right now, but this last week and this week I'm trying to figure out, solidify how we're going to do it.
Yeah, I guess at some point.
Once the show airs, it's going to be, once the diner show airs, it's going to be nuts with those. It's
exactly, yeah. So that, and who knows when that'll air, but it could be
months. Which is a good thing. It's just trying to keep up, you know? You don't want to be out of things when people drive up for it.
Well, how many different pizzas do you typically offer on your menu on any given night?
How many do we? I can count right now. We have like 12 pizzas.
12 different pizzas, and
yeah, and then people can make their own as well.
So let's say of those 12 different types, or you know the options, what percentage are you selling of the patties and the Sicilian and the New York?
The New York is definitely the majority. We only make 10 Sicilians a day. The patties are probably only selling like 6 a day right now.
And you're selling the whole pies. You're not selling squares.
Whole pies.
Yeah, okay.
We do sometimes we'll do squares in the window. Since we kind of switched to, we have garage, we can show you, garage windows over here, and all the service is going through there now. So it's been a little difficult to, we just now made like slice boards to go outside.
It's a garage. You've got to have the garage doors.
Yeah, so slices have been a little more challenging. Like, normally we are a slice house and we sell tons of slices, but just figuring out how to do that without having people come into the restaurant has been a little bit of a shift. And initially it was people mostly just getting whole pies. Now that more businesses are opening up, not just restaurants, but just like offices, we're getting a lot more of our lunch business back, so people want more slices.
So, but the slices are primarily the New York style slices, not the Sicilian squares of slices. Are you saying
exactly? Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. When I opened the place, I actually had a vision that all the slices would be squares, and then like no one here really got the concept. So
like if it doesn't compute, if you didn't grow up with it, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and even living in San Francisco, there were a few places that just had square slices and they were so good. And yeah. So I was like, oh, nobody in Boulder is doing it. And now I kind of know why.
Did you ever go, when you lived in San Francisco, did you ever go to LaGoria, to the LaGoria Bakery in North Beach?
Yeah.
Well, that was right around the corner from Tony's, I guess. So you would know. I mean, when I lived in San Francisco, Tony's, I mean, way back in the 70s, Tony's didn't exist then. And LaGoria was sort of, they kind of ruled North Beach with that focaccia style pizza that
so
they
good.
Had.
Yeah. And Golden Boy, did you ever go there and get their square slices?
I never got Golden Boy because I always just went to LaGoria. That was my, like, you know, when you dial in on one place. Back then, I wasn't thinking about Pizza Quest. I was just eating pizza, you know. So.
Great. So Golden Boy is right around the corner from Tony's, too, and they only serve square slices, and it's open, like, really late. So after, you know, we got off work from Tony's, we go and
because you haven't had enough.
You know, after an hour too big out, you want more something to eat.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Tony's is closed. You go to Golden Boy, right? Which their food is great as well. So there's so much good food in that one like square block.
did you ever eat at Cafe Sport in North Beach?
Yeah.
That was my favorite place, my favorite go-to place in North Beach when I was living there. And they had this Chopino that they called it seafood, and then they had killer pesto pastas. But
that's right.
It was hard to get in.
Go back now.
It was a place that was very, very hard to get into because you had to almost know somebody to get in. And if you tried to call in on their system, they would never answer the phone. So you just couldn't get in. So you'd have to sometimes just show up and beg them to let you in or else throw a scene of some sort, a temper tantrum in order, because they respected that. If you got like really angry with them, then they'd let you in.
That's nice. So great. It's old school.
Yeah, sure. The guy was named Tony Latona. He was from Sicily, and he was like really old school, you know. And he would work in this tiny kitchen about the size of your oven. The kitchen was about the size of your oven. And he would like, you know, work and come out sweating, and then he'd walk through the dining room and just check with everybody, see if you're okay, and then he'd go back and make some more food. It was a scene. It was really like a definite San Francisco happening to be there.
That's awesome. Have you been back in the last few years?
I have not been because Tony passed away, I think, about 10 years ago. I think the restaurant's still there. I have no idea, you know, who's running the kitchen. I mean, you have to have a special kind of constitution to be able to work in a kitchen that small, you know, where it was just so hot, so closed in. And then the dining room was just full of like hundreds and hundreds of tchotchkes that Tony would have had collected from around the world. So it was kind of like a little museum. It was Tony's place, basically. It was called Cafe Sport, but it really was Tony Latona's, you know, little empire. into any so kind great. Of like, the emperor, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just gonna check my eyes really quick. See how okay. they're in there. Oh yeah, do you wanna do your zoom in on them?
Yeah, definitely.
So you can see this is our parvake and they're almost even size now. This is our raw one.
Wow, it really puffs. And that was with that one had had about 45 minutes or so, 40 to 45 minutes of rising time before you put it in. So it had a little bit of a head start and then it
kicks
up.
And ideally I would have liked a little bit longer, but so that's our parvake. It's getting close.
Yeah.
And this is our raw one. Or non-parvake.
It's beautiful.
It's looking good too, actually.
I kind of like the way those tomato stripes work. You know, you didn't try to spread it the cover. You just made the stripes, and it gives a great design to the top.
Yeah, I like it.
Is that something that you did, or was that something that, your mom did when she made hers?
It's something that I've been doing recently. It's She didn't do that, actually. But she enjoys eating these now, so.
She still lets you call it the patties, though, right?
Yes.
Even though it's not 100% true to her way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's my own version of her pizza. It's a tribute to her.
Yeah, a tribute pizza. Yeah, and part of the tribute is the sesame seeds on the undercrust, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it was mainly the sesame seeds. And when I was first, she hadn't made it in actually years. She's so busy now that, I mean, she's still, and I am the one who makes all the pizza, but when I was playing around, I was like, oh, did you put the sesame seeds on the bottom and the top? So we tried it a few different ways, and this is the one that we settled on. But
I have to try doing that. I love the idea of sesame seeds on the undercrust.
Yeah, it's a nice, I mean, I love sesame seeds on anything, to be honest. Yeah, yeah. At our bagel stores, like, but sesame seed bagels are my favorite, sesame candies. Anything with those sesames. All right, let's check this out. I think it's like another minute on that. Okay.
Well, we can wait. We can keep talking.
Yeah.
Take a stroll through memory lane. So you said that Boulder now has more pizzerias and Mills. Now you've got Mills in Boulder. You mentioned Andy Clark, who has the Moxie Bakery in Louisville, which is basically a suburb of Denver and Boulder.
It's kind of in between.
And Andy's a friend of mine and a phenomenal baker. I think he got nominated for a James Beard Award. I mean, he's come a long way. I knew him when he was the head baker for Whole Foods Bakehouse.
You did? So you guys go way back.
Yeah. And he was
they're doing some pretty incredible stuff there.
So I haven't been to Moxie Bakery since he opened it, but I understand it's great. And I'm glad to know that you're connected with him because, you know, he's the real deal when it comes to breads.
Yeah, you'll have to make a trip out here now.
Well, believe me, it was on my list of places to go until we got shut down.
I know. All right. So this is our parvake.
Beautiful. Audrey, do you ever put, in addition to the cheese underneath, do you ever put any fresh cheese on top?
Fresh cheese, like fresh
mozzarella or ricotta or anything, you know, any soft absolutely. Stuff.
Yeah, we do ricotta. We do burrata after it comes out of the oven.
Burrata? That sounds nice, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I went through a phase of, like, learning how to make fresh mozz, but it doesn't, at least in my opinion, it doesn't quite translate on a New York-style pizza because it cooks a little bit too long, and it kind of breaks down the cheese and loses, for me at least, like, the whole beauty of fresh mozz is that it's only in the oven for a little bit, so it retains that freshness.
Yeah.
But I think, actually, since we have the Pizza Master, we're going to start playing around with a little bit hotter temperatures. So normally, the grandmas and the Sicilians, we bake at 550 to 575, but our New York style, we're cooking at about 650. But the oven gets up to like 930, so we need to start exploring that a little bit more.
You could make Neapolitan-ish pizzas at that temperature.
Exactly. Yeah, there's so many options. So the cheese crust, kind of just gotta get that out of the way a little bit. Yeah. And also the beauty of the parvake, I've realized, is normally when we put it in raw, we have to take it out of the pan and then cook it a little bit longer to crisp up the bottom because any good pizza person knows you need that bottom really crispy, right?
Yeah.
But this one is kind of, it's already there. So you can see it's nice and crispy already, that bottom.
And the sesame seeds don't burn when you...
So we don't like pre-toast them at all because they crisp up already on the pan.
Yeah.
Or they toast one when they're in there.
It's got, great.
This one's a little bit more structurally sound, I've noticed. I think our parfait, or our raw ones actually look good.
All right.
So that wasn't even 5 more minutes. That was...
Amazing. It'll be interesting to see how close they are on the other side.
Right.
So, and while you're releasing it from the pan, are there finishing garnishes that you typically use or no garnishes? It goes out ungarnished.
Yeah, so we're going to add a little bit of fresh or dried oregano and Sicilian dried oregano and some grated parm.
Ah, okay.
This one's really sticking. And that's going to be our finishers. And I think that the grated parm just adds that little bit extra saltiness. And
Yeah. I don't think you can ever go wrong adding some parm or Romano to the top. But
yeah, right.
But I'm glad to see that you're saying it's harder to get it out because that's the problem I have when I do the unbaked crust is that it tends to it's like a crapshoot. Sometimes you're worried after all that work that you're not going to be able to get it out of the pan without it like breaking in half or something.
Yeah, and it's funny actually with these pans. I think because they're a little bit newer, I've noticed they stick a lot more. Whereas the Allied pans, they kind of pop right out.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's just because they're so seasoned at this point. You know, we've had them for almost 5 years.
Right.
That it really just pops out. But
okay.
Yeah,
well,
it's a different,
Audrey, while you're getting this one out of the pan, we're gonna take a break, and we're gonna reload our. We only get so many minutes on the Zoom, so we're gonna reload and come back with a fresh slate. So I'm gonna let you take this out. We're gonna just take a short break, but we're gonna continue with another round of finishing up and tasting the pizza. With Audrey
Perfect.
Sherman.
That sounds great.
The garage.
We'll see you guys in a minute.
We'll see you all soon. Come on back. Wow! So now we're seeing both pizzas. We've got the parbake and the unparbake, the raw dough. And do you need to pop them back in? Did you say?
She's grabbing a peel. One sec.
Okay.
So the parbake we're just gonna throw back in for like 30 seconds just to cook that bottom a little bit more.
Okay.
But it's almost done. Pretty close.
Do you typically?
We'll show you once it gets closer. One of the things I do like about the raw one is that the cheese crust kind of, I feel like all the flavors kind of meld together a little bit better than when you do the parbake, but parsley is pretty close. It's a little more structural sound.
The one that's sitting there now, that's the one that was on the raw dough, right?
No, so this is the parbake.
Oh, the par. So the one that went back in was the raw bake.
Oh yes, did I misstate that?
Yeah,
that
was but the raw so bake. In other words, it needs just a little bit more direct caramelization on the bottom.
Exactly, yeah, because the bottom doesn't cook quite enough, and you know,
that's one of the challenges with the raw dough. At least you're able to get it out of the pan. That's the key.
We finally got it out of the pan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, so, that has some nice leoparding there.
You can see. And you can see, like, cheese crust. That's what I like about the raw dough, is the cheese, like, really just, it's very cohesive with the dough.
Yeah, it's really just beautifully. I like it. I just am taken by the contrast by using this sauce that way. The thicker sauce in stripes, you get a visual contrast between the cheese and the sauce that you don't typically get if you just spread the sauce over everything.
Yeah, and we do it both ways. Like our Sicilians, we normally kind of sauce the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
So this is just a little bit of grated Parmesan.
Okay. Yeah.
Obviously, if we're making this for a customer, I would be wearing gloves, but.
Yeah.
You This is some just like Sicilian oregano and do a little bit on top.
Nice, nice.
And then just some fresh basil. And
Just let it wilt on the hot pizza.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just a really simple pie, but it's actually one of my favorites.
So how much does one of these patty pies cost?
So yeah, an original tomato pie is going to be $21. $22 for, like, this pie would be $22 here.
And then if they want pepperoni or something else, then you just add per topping.
Exactly, yeah. We do like $2 a topping. And well, the hand-pinched sausage is actually my favorite on these styles. It's really good.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. And is that sausage that you make or you buy?
We make the sausage in-house. Yeah, and I think it's because we pinch it on raw, like some of the juices blend with everything.
Yeah.
So should we cut these and do a little comparison of the structure?
Absolutely. Now, I've already forgotten which one is the parbake and which one is the raw.
See, you're not close. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
So this is going to be our parbake, and okay. This is our raw.
Okay.
Raw dough.
So, of course, since I'm not going to... I don't have the pleasure of being able to taste it. We're going to rely on your sort of description, your narrative as to any differences and nuances.
Totally. Yeah, so you can see this is the parbake, and it has some nice structure in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still thin because it's, you know, that's, in my opinion, at least a grandma should be a little bit thinner than a Sicilian.
Yeah, but it's still, it has a really nice, it's some nice aeration in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then let's see that non-parbake. This one's going to be a little bit denser.
Now, if you had let it go instead of 40 minutes, if you had let it rise for an hour or an hour and a half, would it be a little more like the parbake?
Little airier, yeah. It would be a little closer, but it's still got a nice, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not as different as you would think, I think, is the idea there.
I'll bet if you had, like, a focus group in there of 30 customers and you did a blind tasting, you'd probably get a 50-50 split as to which one would win.
Right? Yeah, so that's the parbake. I don't know if it's easier if I just hold it up.
Yeah. Well, that one had the benefit of baking without toppings on it, so it continued to, it didn't get weighed down by the sauce.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. That is exactly it. It's well stated. But you can see that the raw one is a little bit denser, which actually I like. I know everyone's all about that, like, super crispy pizza, but I kind of like the...
Well, that one reminds me more of what I had when I ate at Umberto's was the denser. Yeah. It was tighter. Not denser, but tighter holes, you know, so it didn't seem as airy as the...
Did you say at King Umberto's?
No, I ate it at the original Umberto's. There's like Umberto's and King Umberto's. So I never have been to King Umberto's. I only ate at Umberto's. And, and of course they have a big battle over who invented it, who claims bragging rights for the title. I think it's a family spat that they have to resolve between themselves. we're gonna talk to some folks from King Umberto's and try to get the real story. We'll have that in a future episode. Yeah,
it's interesting, like, because I've talked to a few different people about their grandmas, and we've tried them at a bunch of different places, and they're all very different. Like, we were at King Umberto's last summer and had their grandma, completely different than anything I've ever had, and it was amazing. It was, like, you know, one of the best grandmas I've had, but it was such a different style than other ones.
Yeah. Well, I think that they are different from each other. Just like, you know, if you go to New Haven and you go to, Frank Pepe's or Sally's, they're a block apart, and they both have fanatical followings, and they both, you know, have long histories. And you just kind of have to pick and choose if you live in New Haven, you have to choose between them. If you're like me and you're coming in from out of town, you can be unbiased and you can say, I love them both.
Totally. Totally. But I think that's like one of the beauty of having a pizzeria is like you're putting out your food, like what you want to cook, you know? I don't really like labeling things like as a traditional style because exactly. I don't make it traditionally, you know, I make it how I want to make it. So this is why it's more of a patty style than a grandma to me at least.
Yeah, and I like the fact that it's really a tribute, and really all pizzas are in a sense a tribute to some inspiration, whether it's Neapolitan or Neo-Neapolitan or whatever. Every grandma is different, right? If two different grandmas made a pizza, they were going to come out differently from each other. So why should every pizzeria have the same exact pizza?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's, yeah, you don't want every pizzeria to have the same because that would just be boring.
Yeah, but then what's the point? Yeah. So have you taken a bite of either? Or are you in
yeah,
a bite?
Yeah, I mean, my husband's back here. But
yeah, why don't we, like, can we get your husband on camera? Can we
introduce him? Should we get his opinion?
Yeah, can you get him on camera? We want to meet him.
What do you think, babe? I'll munch on mine while you're talking to him.
Which one are you
eating right now?
One bite, everybody knows the rules. It's delicious. It's amazing. I love the style. The carbs, the cheese on the edge. It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
can you tell the difference between the par bake and the unbaked version?
I can. So this is the unbaked version, and it's just like really light and airy. I mean, they're both light and airy.
I like the raw.
Mm-hmm. Par bake's really good too.
I would. My tendency is to think that, and my experience has been, although I've been proven wrong, but by tasting some of the pies that Jeff Smokovich has made at Pizza Expo, where he does a par bake, and he retains that creamy texture that you usually only get with a single bake. But he pulled it off, and I think more and more people are learning how to do that. But I find that the making it on the single bake, unbaked, that you get a creamier texture, you know, when you bite into it. You still get the snap.
That's a good way of describing it.
Yeah, but it's but they're both equally good. The main thing, the only sin is if it's dry, if it tastes dry and cardboardy, which, you know, neither of these are doing. So as long as you've still got some moisture in there and a good full bake, then you're going to get a great pie.
I agree, and I think, yeah, it's that little bit higher hydration and also letting it rise. Like, I think really knowing the fermentation process makes it not dry out.
Yeah. Well, well, you're getting to have all the fun right now. I wish I could be there.
I know. I wish you guys were here.
I would love to be biting into one of those, but I think that as soon as we sign off, I'm going to have to run into my kitchen and just pull some dough out and make some pizza now because I'm really getting hungry. But they're beautiful, beautiful pizzas, Audrey. And thank you so much walking us through the whole process of making your tribute to the grandma pizza that you call the patty, which is a tribute.
Of course, thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure having you. We'd love to have you back. In fact, we're going to have you back with Laura Meyer. We want to get you back together and talk and further explore, you know, your pizza journeys, you know, both as business owners and as pizzaiolas, you know, in the ever expanding pizza universe. So thank you.
Thank you
so much again for having us. And we will see you on the next year. And we'll see all of you who are watching on the next episode of Pizza Talk. Thank you for joining us. And thank you, Audrey.
Thank you.
From Boulder,
thanks, Peter. We'll see you
Audrey
later.
Jane, Pizza Garage in Boulder, Colorado. And thanks, Dave, for being the cameraman. Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.